Tax Resolution Ninja Show, where we feature the top experts on all things tax to help you understand, navigate, and resolve all your tax-related issues. Now, let's get started with the show.
Hi, I'm Alan Rolnick, the host of the Tax Resolution Ninja Show, where we feature guests and talk about issues from all walks of life, from taxes to health to economics, personal finance, sales and marketing, employment, and many more. Please listen to our prior episodes that feature Jeffrey Schneider, Alex Kuhn, and Samuel Wiener. This episode is brought to you by Alan Rolnick, the Tax Resolution Ninja, and Tri-State Tax Resolution. Do you owe the IRS money or have not filed a tax return for more than 2 years? The IRS is looking for you. They want to throw you a party. This party is not to celebrate your birthday, anniversary, engagement, or wedding. This party is being made to levy your wages up to 90%, take your Social Security check up to 85%, seize your bank account and other assets that you own, and revoke your passport. To stop this party in its tracks, you need to call the Tax Resolution Ninja Hotline. That's 718-841-7317. The Tax Resolution Ninja runs a tax emergency and trauma room that helps people and businesses permanently resolve their tax problems. The Tax Resolution Ninja will do the heavy lifting for you, and you will never have to speak to an IRS agent. If you owe the IRS money, give Alan Rolnick, the Tax Resolution Ninja, a call. I will resolve your tax problem permanently, and you will not have to go to any party that the IRS is throwing for you. To stop the party, call the Tax Resolution Ninja at 718-841-7317. I have as my guest today, Bernard Reese. Bernard is a CPA who does not have a traditional accounting practice, but provides financial consulting and tax advisory services. He is the owner of ReSure Financial Advisors, LLC. He uses a holistic approach to finances and taxes with a focus on real estate, entity structuring, and self-directed retirement accounts. Bernard, thank you for appearing as a guest on my podcast.
Alan, thank you so much for having me. I've been looking forward to this. I've been on lots of shows, but I don't think enough tax professionals host their own shows. So this is something that I've been looking forward to.
There are a few of us out there, but you're right. I don't think there are that many that I've seen. But you know, I got to do something that other people don't do.
And I think that's a good segue into what I think is real value that accountants can bring, more so than, you know, than you may find in other financial disciplines. CPAs do so many different things, but what we most of us have in common is that CPA and accounting is grounded in a real substantive discipline. In order to get to where we got, we had to go through substantial training, certification, and you know, hard knocks and hard work. It's not a sales path. It's not a path where you get a license and then you can sell. It's not get rich quick schemes. It's the real deal.
It's things that The exam itself is, I mean, at least when I took it 30 some odd years ago, it was pretty rough. And I understand it's more difficult now because the focus is different than when I was doing it. And I think that we are not taught how to market our practices. You know, we're taught the auditing. We were taught the auditing. I don't know what they're teaching them now. We were taught the auditing. We were taught the we had some tax work, and a lot of accounting theory. That when you get out into the real world, unless you're doing, you know, certified audits for the big firms, really don't apply. So you know, whatever I know now is because I've experienced it in my working life, rather than learning it in school. When I got out of school, I couldn't do a bank rec. No one taught me how to do a bank rec. You know, so I get into a small firm. So they said to me, reconcile this bank statement. Well, I know I had to reconcile a checkbook and my own personal checkbook. But I didn't know how to do it the way an accountant does it. And I didn't learn that. It took me, I don't know, a year, 2 years to figure this stuff, some of this stuff out. And there was other stuff, you know, that goes along the way. I don't know. I had a client once when I was working for somebody, and it was a retail stationery store in Manhattan. And the guy couldn't pay his sales tax. He was always behind. You know, not that he was, you know, not that he was trying to, he just couldn't do it. And finally, I'm looking at this because I had never seen a situation like this before. And I'm thinking to myself, this guy really should not be in business anymore because he can't cover, you know, you can't cover your sales tax. It tells me that you're not making enough, not bringing enough money in. And so I had the gall, I should say, because I was only a junior accountant at the time, to tell him that, you know, maybe you ought to think about closing up. Because you know you keep getting further and further behind, and you know there's, you know you're not going to catch up, and finally you know he came in and talked to my boss at the time, and that's what happened. They closed the store. So I mean this stuff that they didn't teach you when in school.
But I would say, right? So I've been involved in a lot of areas of finance, audit, due diligence, tax, the fundamentals, that groundwork that's laid in the education is absolutely necessary.
Absolutely. You're absolutely
without,
right.
Without the hands-on experience, it's nebulous and meaningless. But the diving in and trying to do an audit, understand how the books and records flow and the accounting would also be impossible without the theoretical.
Right, you're absolutely right. You still need the theory, but no one teaches you the practice. No one taught us at that time the practical usage of all this information that we were learning. And you know, the CPA exam was geared towards, you know, traditional accounting, you know, debits, credits, ordering books, you know, so it wasn't real life stuff. And from what I understand, and I may be wrong about this, is that they're doing more practical stuff now than they were 30 some odd years ago.
Wow. Okay. I've enjoyed this. And we got to keep this conversation going sometime. unless you think the audience wants to hear, you know, two accountants reminiscing.
Yeah. Some people might, you know, but, tell me, how did you get started? Why did you give up traditional accounting and start doing, financial advisory services?
So my background is actually not really traditional, so to speak. I didn't start in a, you know, say a small accounting firm doing 1040s and tax returns. That's not where I got my start. I kind of got thrown into the deep end of the pool immediately. So I was tasked with advising some very, very large middle market firms. So middle market means we're looking, and I mean true middle market. So $250 million in annual revenue. So, you know, substantial companies, privately held, with tax strategies that were being presented to them by so-called financial advisors and life insurance agents. And wisely, the business owners realized they need somebody else to kind of hold our hands and see, are there any blind spots here, right? They're a large operation, closely held. And so this is like a party for financial advisors and salespeople, every day presenting new things that they can do. And a lot of it is geared towards tax reduction. So they needed somebody else to help them navigate this. And frankly, their accountants, you know, that they were using traditionally, knew traditional accounting, traditional taxes. They were kind of conservative. And they're like, oh, these stuff, we're not familiar with them. But we're not, we don't know about too much about it. It looks like it may have some risk. So they didn't really have anybody to turn to, oddly enough, to guide them through this. They realized that, hey, we're being pitched all these tax strategies, but there's nobody that can guide us and advise us in a substantive way. They've got the life insurance agent saying, do this, do that, and you're going to save a bundle on taxes. But there was no, their accountant couldn't give them any meaningful information about it. So they said, all right, we know this guy. We can't find the professional in our network that knows the ins and outs of captive insurance and retirement plans. So let's take a bright guy that we know, and he's got the education and accounting, and let's put him on this. And that is how I got started. There was a huge gap. There was nobody to fill that space, that void. And that's how I got started diving right into the deep end.
So you were working for a firm at that time, I assume.
So I was working for a firm that is a due diligence firm, and they did advisory in the sense like financial restructuring and business advisory. They were not a tax firm. It was run and operated by CPAs, but it was not really a tax firm. And this closely held company was a client of theirs and for some other items. And they're like, okay, we need somebody for this. We don't have anybody. Our accountants can't help us. Who is just a sharp guy that can take things kind of from the ground up, take the initiative? And it was really fun. It was tax code regulations, case law. And that's where I really found that, hey, I love this research. I love taking the deeper dive into the tax side. And here we are today.
When did you decide to go out on your own?
Yeah, this goes back to 2016.
Okay.
And there were a lot of things involved in that. I realized that you kind of have to make a move, kind of stick a stake in the sand somewhere. What are you going to do? So at that point, I worked while I was in school, and I passed the CPA exams. I actually, you know, that note, I did them in about 3 months. And
that's pretty good.
I just had to get them out of the way. So I did that. And then I had a job offer from PwC. And I realized I had kind of this depth of experience because I had worked while I was in school. And I knew that if I'm going to go to PwC and, you know, as where they were putting me, I would pull my hair out because it's going back to square one, almost square zero. Yeah. Where they don't want you to think, they don't want you to ask questions, they don't want you to, they kind of want you to turn your brain off and do the procedures.
Right.
And I had done that and been through that and knew that I couldn't get myself to do it again. I kind of paid that toll. You know, when I went to work for that first due diligence firm, in their initial period, I asked a lot of questions. I said, why are you doing it this way? Do it the other way. And they didn't appreciate that.
No, it didn't go over. I'm sure it didn't go over well.
But after a while, I kind of joined the inner circle, and they learned to appreciate it. But it was an uphill battle, and I wasn't ready to do that again. So I got in touch with PwC, and I said, "Nah, this is not for me." And I started my own practice.
Okay. How long have you been doing this? So you've been doing this since 2016.
Yes.
Okay. Now you do it a holistic approach. Tell the audience what it means to do a holistic approach to tax planning and financial services.
So there are two things, two key words when you say holistic. There's comprehensive and integrated. And I'll explain what those two, what the difference is. So when we talk about what people tend to have is a life insurance agent is going to pitch something, right? The financial advisor is going to pitch something else. The real estate guy is going to say, for your wealth building and wealth management, do this. Then you're going to have some other people presenting this tax tool or the other tax tool. And we tend to approach these in isolation, kind of in a one-dimensional approach. And I get people all the time, Bernard, should I do this investment? Should I buy this life insurance policy? And there's really no way to answer that question unless we understand all the pieces of your financial puzzle and how they fit together. So when we say comprehensive, we mean to say, all right, there's your financial puzzle includes the tax side, includes investing, it includes protection, it may include your business, it has many different components. So comprehensive means we're looking at all of them. Integrated, it means we're looking at how all those parts interact with each other. So rather than have when look at them in a one-dimensional way where you're bound to end up with things that don't fit well together, you've got to look at all the pieces together. And that means you need to be working with somebody that understands all the different components, understands the insurance side, understands the investing side, understands real estate, and understands tax.
You do this, you have a staff, or do you do this by yourself?
So what I've been moving towards, because for the substantive work, the analysis, the real understanding, it is me, and I've had trouble cloning myself. I've been trying very hard. I haven't managed to do that yet.
As most solopreneurs do.
So exactly. And so, for example, what you're doing, right, you've got a podcast. So I think digital education has to be a big component to this. And that's what I'll be launching soon, is a place where people can come. And I think 90% of the path can be solved and addressed with people that educate themselves from a reliable source. I think for most of the population, that can really go a long way. And to put it in perspective, do you have any idea what the real cost of a financial advisor is?
I haven't got a clue, actually.
So I got this question, right? I get this question, Bernard, the advisor's cost, it's only 1% per year. If you do the math, right, let's just assume, I'll tell you what the inputs are for this calculation. Obviously, it's not perfect. But say you can, as a baseline, S&P 500 return over its history is approximately 10%. Compound annual growth rate, if you just bought S&P 500 and held it, is 10% per year. Obviously, that's not the ideal way to do things, but it's a good way just to measure the real cost of a financial advisor and see what their value they're adding. So if you buy, if you bought, and I'm going to use big numbers because this is a real case scenario that I was presented with. Somebody has $10 million liquid to invest. They want to use a financial advisor. The advisor is only 1%. So here's what I explained to them. The financial advisor usually adds a 1%, which is their fee. And there's usually an additional miscellaneous costs that get tacked on of about 0.5%. So the true cost of the advisor is usually about 1.5%. And there's a lot of industry research behind this if you want to see the actual research to back this up. Well, if you are invest $10 million today, the difference in 30 years, whether you bought the S&P 500 yourself or you had an advisor, is $63 million. 30 years from now, the difference in wealth, whether you had that 1.5% cost or did not, is $63 million. It is absolutely astounding. That 1.5% cost over 30 years results in a 57% reduction in net worth.
You know, I know that my wife's family, they established a relationship with one, you know, with a company. And I've watched it grow from very small, you know, very small, you know, the estate wasn't all that big. And it's like four times what it was when this thing was set up. It must be 10, I don't know, 10 years. No, it must be 15 years. And there's no way in hell that the family themselves could have done this. Because we each had our own businesses. We were doing our own, you know, making our own livings. And you know, it just wouldn't have happened. I mean, this particular company has done really well by us.
And so here's what I would say, and I think it's important to bear in mind. That generally speaking, right, that is true that people, right, there's not the investing part for the most part is a result of the market activity. So the real way an advisor, if they were really wanted to do right and the ultimate buy you, they would set you up and they would take away kind of this, I call it the Wizard of Oz. There's not the 1.5% cost that you have to overcome over time is almost impossible. And a simple investing portfolio will put you way, way, way ahead. Is there some value on the investing side to having an advisor? Absolutely. But if you, a little education will show you that you could achieve very similar results without the advisor. So education and paying one time to get that education will put you millions and millions of dollars ahead. So having this, you know, this, the way the financial advisory wants things is that you think, I can't do this. There's some magic sauce here that you can't do and you need them. They want you to hand over the money and kind of feel like, hey, these guys are taking care of it. You would come out rather than telling you, hey, Alan, you can just do these few simple things and be millions of dollars wealthier rather than having this leak, this 1.5% leak out of your portfolio, which over time reduces the net worth by, you know, over 30 years, we're looking at a 60% reduction. Obviously, it gets bigger and bigger with the passage of time.
Yeah, but you have to have the interest and the time to do it. And I think that most people don't have the interest.
And I think it's because they think that it requires an incredible investment of time and education. And it's just not so. If you can get to a reliable source that cuts through the noise and gives you a clear, simple approach that you can implement, who would want to pay $60 million? Who wants to pay 60% of their net worth for something that they could learn in 3 hours and come out millions of dollars ahead?
And so you're saying that the time that they would need to invest in this is not all that great.
It Exactly. Even the advisor. What do you? I put a poll up on LinkedIn. If you'd like, I can share those with you. I put up an entire series of polls on LinkedIn about all these topics. And one of the questions is, firstly, does the financial industry aim to empower you, or do they actually choose to foster dependency? And of course, the answer is they choose to foster ongoing dependency. They do not want to empower you. They want you to feel dependent on them. They want you to feel that, hey, there's this stuff is above my pay grade. Let me just hand it over. Another poll that I put up is how much time do you think the advisor spends on your portfolio? Most advisors spend the majority of their time on sales and marketing. There is, on an ongoing basis, the time commitment to portfolio management is not that high. Again, of course, these are all generalizations. And so relative to, there are two components to this. One is realizing there's no magic formula and you can master it. You can do it. It should not intimidate you. And perhaps the impetus and the incentive to realize that is realizing the huge cost. And the way these fees are set up is that there's no accountability, right? It's set up as a percentage of your portfolio. Nobody ever asks you to write a check, right? It just leaks out over time.
But the other, on the other hand, you know, if you're watching what's going on, which in the case of my wife's family, they're watching this. They're watching it like a hawk. We've replaced the company a number of times because we didn't like what they were doing, you know, and our value of that portfolio was not going where it should have been. So I mean, you do have. It's not totally giving it over to them, because we actually keep an eye on it.
So here's what I have a question for you, right? Obviously, actual portfolio structuring is far more complex than what I'm about to propose, but it's good for the purposes of this exercise, right? So portfolio structuring is about risk and returns, goals, right? It needs to take a step back. But many people tend to view portfolio just about returns, right? And like, all right, where's this portfolio? It should be worth, why isn't it going up? There's not enough focus on risk and the other components around portfolio structuring. Therefore, how about if you take the value of your portfolio and all the inputs, all the inflows of cash, right? The big starting value of the portfolio, any subsequent inflows of cash that were made, if there was additional funding, had you put that in some sort of index fund, where would it be today relative to what it is?
Okay.
And then, right, that serves sort of the people that think that there's investment magic at play, right, and are thinking, hey, we're going to the financial industry to invest our money. Then that's a good way to say, all right, how much value did they really add? Now, advisors can add incredible value in many, many different ways, but oddly enough, it's usually not in the way that the clients think.
When you say an influx of cash, does that include reinvested dividends?
You could absolutely. So you can include reinvested dividends and say, all right, what had happened had we? Where is this portfolio today? And calculate where it would be with all the inflows, the reinvested dividends, and had you just put those into index funds, be it a total stock market index fund, right? Where would it be? Do that calculation, and see what it yields.
Okay. So how do you help your clients get to where in your theory, how do you get them to do this? I mean,
So in my theory, clients have to be empowered, not dependent. In corporate governance, right? We understand that there's an audit committee. There's a board of directors, right? The audit committee has to have a financial expert on it. Otherwise, they have no idea what they're talking about. So somebody has to look out for your interests. And the financial industry actually wants you kind of to be asleep at the wheel and have those fees leak out. So at the very least, most people can be empowered to actually take control on their own. And of course, some people still need somebody to do it for them, right? Need their hand held. But at the very least, they need to be empowered to understand what's going on and what they need so that they can provide oversight. And so my approach is to either educate people, and if we're going to work closely one-on-one because they have a more complex scenario, or they're the type of person that says, I don't want to deal with it. Education is not for me. It's geared to be a one-time engagement where they walk away empowered. And they have a setup that may need tweaking from time to time, but there's no ongoing leak where no value is exchanged there's no accountability. We work closely. We take apart every component of their financial picture. And my background in tax and due diligence and analysis enables me to say, hey, here we're going to offer you real value. It's not just about some mythical investment magic sauce. This is real substantive collaboration that we're going to do to position you for success. It's a one-time fee. And what's astounding is you tell people, okay, what's the fee? And they're like sticker shock, right? But then if you say, do you realize that if you pay that only 1% fee per next 30 years, it's going to cost you $60 million, right? Is the real cost of that. So paying somebody to actually work with you and empower you, right, puts you $60 million ahead. The difference is somebody's actually saying, hey, you're actually writing the check. So you want to know what you're paying for. But with these AUM fees that leak out of the bottom that nobody ever asks you to write the check, there's no accountability. You never say, hey, what exactly are you doing? How much time are you spending on this for this millions and millions of dollars that it's costing me? So what people need to realize is that they need to be empowered to take control and have oversight, understand what they really need, and judiciously select the services that are meaningful to them.
Okay, so I can apply your theory to what I do. And some things may not take me too long to do. And that's only because I've had 30 years of experience of knowing how to what buttons to push.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so that's what they're paying me for. Because they can, some of the stuff that I do, they can actually go to the IRS themselves and do it. And I'll be wide open about that. But I know that in general, people will say, the clients themselves will say something to the IRS agent that they shouldn't be talking about. You know, and my skill is to avoid that situation. And know which buttons I have to push to get the result that I want.
Oh, absolutely. So it's not about time. That's not obviously this. It's about value.
Right.
Right. It's about value. So the question is, What is the value? Two things. What is the value proposition? What's the value that you're getting? And what's the cost that you're paying for it? Right. Of course, we always pay for conveniences. Everybody can kind of do everything on their own if they'd like to, but we pay people to help us. But there's always accountability, and you're generally able to understand the value that you're getting. And then you choose and you understand what you're paying for it. And we make those choices. That's economics 101, right? Utility.
Yeah.
Right. So it's all about utility. But the financial industry is set up so that you think the value that you're getting is one thing, and you're actually not getting any of that value. That's not the value that they could provide to you. There's like the value that value is infinitesimal. And then you have no way to assess the cost. So we're in this funny marketplace where you cannot assess the value and you're not properly assessing the cost. And that's what leads to things to go totally haywire. Of course, when people pay an accountant, I once said, can you imagine if I would go to a business owner, I'm doing their tax return, right? Take this company, they're doing $250 million in annual revenue. And I say, listen, to do your tax return, I am charging, I want to charge 5% of annual revenue, or I want to charge a percentage of your net worth, right? They would say that's insane, right? So when you work with the financial industry, there should be accountability. There should be an understanding. So the financial industry thrives on keeping you in the dark and thinking they're providing some value. And you can get 99% of the way there with a little education and empowerment. So the value that they're providing has to be measured, right? Not relative to what you did if you stuck your head in the sand. It's what happens if you were talking to one financial advisor says, hey, you keep stay ignorant and pay me tens of millions of and have at a tens of millions of, at a cost of $60 million. And you had another advisor saying, hey, pay me a one-time fee and I will empower you and I will pull back the curtain and you'll see that, hey, you don't need, you're not getting value because if you're just empowered, you'll be 99% of the way there on your own. And in many situations, you'll actually come out way ahead. That's the irony of that. Once you pull back the mystique, you realize, hey, what is, I did another post about this. What education do you think financial advisors actually have? What does it take to be? And I think this is good to close with this, and because it brings us back to where we started. To be a CPA, you have to commit to years of schooling, right? Years of education, grueling examination, and pretty heavy duty workload, right?
Yep.
What does it take to become a financial advisor?
Well, I know they have to pass the all the licensing stuff.
Okay, I passed them. I put a LinkedIn post up about this as well. Okay, it's like passing. There's an exam. That's all there is. It's a licensing exam. I passed all of them. So it's kind of like passing the exam to get your driver's permit. So I don't know what it was when you started driving, but that's about what it is.
Okay.
So, now the odd thing is, and this is actually the analogy that I put up on LinkedIn. In order to drive a car, you have to do two things. You have to pass that kind of written test, the permit test, right? Today it's on a computer, right? And then you have to take a road test to show that you can actually drive. The licensing exam to sell insurance or to be financial advisor or securities, right? It doesn't have a road test, right? It's just about this really, really basic and almost irrelevant regulations. The test is 90% about the regulations on the financial industry than actually knowing anything about how to help people. So that's all it takes. You take a test, you study for it a couple of weeks. If you're a sharp fellow, you study a week and a half, not so sharp, 2 months. You take that exam, and then you know the next thing that you get. You get something called a Project 200. You know what Project 200 is?
No.
I didn't believe it until I did it, until I experienced it. Okay, so I'm the CPA, and I have these financial licenses. I get contacted by financial institutions all the time. Come work for us. So at one point I said, you know what? Let's see what this is all about. So I went down to them. They gave me a sales aptitude test. Okay. So you pass the exam. Then they want to know how well you can sell, right? They give you a sales aptitude test.
It's like life insurance, because I tried that out before I went back to school to get my master's in accounting.
Okay.
Yeah, I know what that is. Yeah.
Okay, and then they give you a project 200 means give us a list of 200 contacts, their financial info, their contact info, their family situation, their net worth, and if we like that contact, we like your friends and family and the low hanging fruit, then you can come sell. Right. That is more or less the process. Now, of course, over time, if you're in that industry, you learn terminology, you learn concepts. The barrier to entry is so low, you couldn't even trip over it.
Well, you can tell by what's selling insurance these days, or even back when I was, when I was in my 30s and 20s and 30s. So I know it's one step above a used car salesman.
So now there's some generalizations here, but the rule is the industry. What I like to say is let's not focus on the kind of the bad apples and the good apples in the industry. Overall, it's an industry that thrives by keeping people dependent and deliberately and consciously not empowering. And a little bit of clarity and a little bit of empowerment is worth millions of dollars to any investor. And so what I would, and I know often on these podcasts, I get asked about a book. Which book do you recommend? Do you do that with your guests?
Yeah, I do.
All right. So here's a book that I think is great for our discussion. It's a book that is decades old. And so I think it's really great for this. It's called Where Are the Customers' Yachts by Fred Schwed. A gem of a book. I encourage you to get it. I think you'll love it. And the principles that are there hold true. They're as true now as they were when he wrote the book, I think back in the 40s. It's been reprinted. A real gem. Where Are the Customers' Yachts?
Okay. On that note, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule. This was fascinating because, you know, I mean, we've got, like I said, my family's got uses a company to manage the family portfolio. I never really thought about what's actually coming out of it, only because, you know, I'm looking at the numbers and I'm seeing, well, we're doing okay. And the telling part was that when the market took a dumping, we weren't hurt all that bad.
So that's actually a sign of real portfolio management. So that's a good sign. But the question is, what it really comes down to is the strategies to achieve that. If you can be a tax resolution ninja, you can do that. I promise you.
Yeah, I could. The thing is that I don't have the... It's not that I can't. I don't have the interest in doing it.
But that's because you think it takes more than it does.
You know, because there were times during my career when I would, you know, say to hell with the accounting. Let me manage my own stuff. And yeah, I would do all right for a period of time. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'd get lost in the shuffle. My brain would get lost in the shuffle, and you know, and all of a sudden I found myself down, you know, down 50% because I didn't pay attention to it.
So here's the thing: if you were to be empowered and taught a few simple principles, and actually shown exactly how to execute them, you could almost set it and forget it. Almost. Not completely, but to a great extent. And it would not require much commitment of time or brain space, except at when you set it up and when you periodically revisit it. And you would probably come out with near certainty, come out far, far ahead of where you're at. So it is true, there is a need for that education, but it's precisely what you're describing, is that people think that they should hand it over rather than being empowered. And to be taught those principles is priceless. It's infinite value, but it's recognizing that these are principles that you can easily master, easily implement, not be a time suck, and it's worth to you, the value of that is worth millions and millions of dollars.
No, we'll talk about that off the air. Thanks very much for taking the time. I really appreciate you being on, and I've learned a lot just by talking to you.
Alan, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Please listen to our prior episodes. We try to do one of these podcasts once a week, and we'll see you next week. Take care. Have a good week.
Thanks for listening to the Tax Resolution Ninja Show. Be sure to click subscribe to get updates on our latest episodes.